Hey, follow me on Instagram, Yes King Oliver, and make sure you follow and subscribe so you get a notification when I've released a new episode. You have a great day. So what I've realized is a lot of people, they are trying to choose happiness over peace, and there is a difference. Peace is where you're, say, content. Everything is peaceful. Like, you wake up, there's just silence. The birds are tweeting. It's just peaceful. Happiness, you could say, is the feeling you're getting from observing the lack of wind or the birds tweeting. And there's a massive difference. So people think that happiness comes from a partner, money, a house, a stable job, or whatever, and so they go down those paths to get those things that they think will make them happy. Whereas if you think what peace is, well, peace is just a cow in a field eating grass, and he's just got nothing else to do. He is at peace with himself. And so when you think about how we're chasing this happiness, which is essentially the same thing as peace, we are going in the opposite direction to find something which is already here, which is just what we've already had. All these things are supposed to provide us happiness. Take that all away, we've got peace. And really what we want is peace, not happiness. So the solution is to just to go back to what we've always had, which is nothing. And once you're grateful with nothing, then you can have the extra things like a nice green tea, go out for a restaurant, go to the cinema, go for a bike ride and have a partner. But peace comes before happiness.
Yeah, well, I think I love your perspective on that. The only part I disagree with is I don't think that you have to have nothing to appreciate and to find peace, right? So, you know, in Buddhist philosophy, they talk about how emptiness is form, right? So everything is nothing and emptiness is form. But that emptiness can be a perception. But I don't believe that you need to perceive, like, I don't believe in the concept of you have to struggle in order to appreciate. I don't, you know, they talk about it in Buddhism. They talk about some people who have sudden awakenings, right? So there's a story in one of the Zen Buddhist sutras of a plumber and he's, you know, doing whatever. He likes his life. He is working on somebody's plumbing and he has an immediate awakening. And his reality doesn't necessarily change after that, but his perceptions do, right? Because really, I think we all look at peace and awakening and happiness, even in our spiritual community, as something outside of us. So it's either A, you have to go through massive amounts of suffering to experience it, or B, you have to follow whatever like 12-step program this person's selling or whatever, you know what I mean, to have that awakening experience. But I think suffering can be a catalyst for that. And it was for many people like myself, right? But then what's suffering? Suffering is based off of perception and it's based off of how we perceive experiences in our lives. I could be a billionaire and, you know, have the perfect body and have the perfect relationship and be miserable, right? So suffering comes from perceptions of experiences. But that being said, I don't like the language around, okay, well, you have to suffer or you won't experience it. Or, you know, that phrase that some people will say, like, and I used to say this too, Oliver, is you don't understand, right? So maybe we look at somebody, we make assumptions off of them, assuming that their life is must be easier than ours or was easier than ours in that moment. And then we'll say things like, well, they don't understand. And the reality is we have no idea what anybody goes through to get to their energy of peace. And I don't think that peace is something that can be quantified on some sort of ladder where your peace is more justifiable if you've been through more suffering. Do I think that suffering is a catalyst for awakening? Yes. And do I think that everybody's suffering is different and everybody's suffering deserves the same love and affection and tenderness and healing, right? But I think if we get stuck in what somebody said this to me once, I can't remember, she called it the woke Olympics. It's like, if we get stuck in this, like, well, I suffered more, so my awakening is stronger. I think what we're doing is we're just applying that same unconscious, like, competition and that same unconscious experience in relationships with one another that keeps us stuck in certain things like toxic capitalism and suffering and dukkha or whatever, right? And we're just applying it to a spiritual realm instead. And then it's like, okay, what was the point of that? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So it's like this thing about finding peace. There's not just like one peace, like say there's one place where we all go when we die, heaven, that is it, right? There's not just one place, for example, because then that is saying everyone is going through different pain in order to get to the same place. Each person is basically in their own unique situation, and they're trying to get themselves out of their own unique situation. It's all subjective to them. As you said, it's all about perception. I do believe that in anything, business, in life, you need to experience the feeling, the good or the bad, in order to appreciate it, in order to get yourself out of it. So do you have to go through pain in order to have an awakening? No, because it's two different things. Like when you go through an awakening, you're essentially becoming aware of you want a different feeling compared to how you feel. And how do you do that? Essentially, you go back and undo it. And it's like, if I hadn't have gone down that path, would there be anything to undo? And the answer is no. But if I hadn't have gone through the pain, would I choose to be around toxic people, to take drugs, which could lead to more hard drugs, which could lead to, say, homelessness, if I haven't been through that experience in the first place, because I don't know what it feels like? And the answer is, if I haven't experienced that pain, then I'd have nothing to lose. So I call that what I call the jacket scenario. You have to freeze your bollocks off and not have your friend give you his jacket when you're out in order to remember your own next time. You can't just be like, oh, I'll just borrow his jacket because, you know, it might not get cold, because then you're taking a chance every single time by going out, not bringing a jacket, hoping your friend will bail you out. But then at the same time, my dad taught me all the mistakes that he made growing up, and it didn't serve me any purpose. I knew consciously, though, I knew what I would have to do in terms of writing. If this happens, what do you do? Like at school, you have a question. If in business, if somebody goes bankrupt, what's it called? It's liquidation. But if you have to run a business, you know, going through that situation, it's very different to just having a black and white answer. Okay, well, I've not got any money, I need to file for liquidation. We're taught just this and that, black and white. And experiencing that liquidation and the pain and all the shit that comes with it, it's completely different than just to knowing. So do you have to go through pain in order to really appreciate it? I would say yes, but at the same time, if you've not gone through it, there's nothing to learn in the first place. So as you said, do you have to, is somebody else's pain worse to say that they've gone through a, or their spiritual awakening is more important than that person? No, but to somebody's not, to somebody who doesn't need to go through an awakening, they don't have anything to change in the first place. So it literally is just a dog has gone that way down a hole. That hole was 3 meters deep. He's now got to try and get out 3 meter deep hole. Whereas that squirrel might have gone up a really tall tree and it might take him years to get out that, to get back down that tree. Or a cat's gone up a tree and it might take him a longer time than the cat next door who's gone up a fence. It's all literally subjective to what you, where you are at, where you're going and where you want to be. So it's like a unique situation each time. So do you have to go through pain to experience it? If you're not in the pain, then it doesn't exist. If you're in the pain, you've already experienced it, so you have no choice but to get out. So that person doesn't have to go through pain to experience it, because there's nothing to go through there. They're not trapped, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And something about that is the other side of the coin. The other side of this coin is duality. We remember the dark, the stuff that obviously in that kind of woo way of yin and yang energy and those polarities. I really feel intuitively that my biggest, I think what rubbed me the wrong way about that and what does is the idea that I think the universe is always listening, God, source, whatever, the universe is always listening. And I don't know about you, but I've been like this in the past where I was really resistant to learning lessons, to studying the self, to studying these concepts and ideologies unless I was in a dark space. And so something that I tell my clients and that I tell myself is like, I want to constantly be working on myself, working on uncovering the truth and what that means to me, and working on being present in my spiritual awakening journey when things are good too. Because I don't want, well, because it feels good, but also because I don't want to send the message out there to the universe, the vortex, that I only learn lessons when things are bad, bad, quote unquote. Does that make sense? So of course, when things come in, and I think a lot of it boils down to perception, right? For example, like, you know, I went through a pretty crazy breakup like 6 months ago, and I had like two clients disenroll in a program. So I wasn't sure how I was going to pay rent or whatever it is, or even at like my absolute worst of like, I open up my book saying like, you know, I was sitting on a college dorm floor wanting to die, right? Even when I was in like the depths of my depression, I always knew in the back of my head, okay, like this doesn't have to be a bad experience. This is something that the universe is teaching me a lesson with. But that being said, I don't personally believe that like I have to be at that low of a point. I don't believe that I have to be at rock bottom to learn lessons. I really want to try to proactively learn lessons, or at least attract them in, right? Because maybe I'm not seeking them, but allow them to come in and put off the energy that I can learn and grow when things are quote unquote good or quote unquote steady as well.
It's like if someone's content in their job, then they won't search for another job. If somebody isn't content in their job, then they will search for another job. So somebody, as I said, they have that peace within them. So for us, having the same job forever might be the worst, night of the biggest fear on the planet, doing the same thing forever. We need to keep evolving and do new shit. So I'm not content. I'm not at peace with myself. I need change. You could say that transition between getting a new job is the pain part, which is I'm unhappy at work. I need to get out of that pain. And then I'm not in pain. So it's not people have to go through pain to learn. If somebody is in a painful situation, they can either stay in pain or reset that pain back to neutral. If somebody is content in their work, they're not in pain. They don't know what pain is, just like they don't know what happiness is. They're just a cow in a field grazing. He doesn't know that tomorrow he might die or the farmer might come and take him away. He doesn't know that. So I think it's,
well,
for me, and I'm speaking for my situation, I only learned through my pain, and that's because I was in the pain, and the only way I could get myself out was to know that this is, I don't want this to be in my life. I have a choice to do something about it, or that pain will still be there. But if I wasn't in pain in the first place, then I wouldn't know the pain and getting myself out. So I don't think it's as simple as, can people learn through pain? We speak from our own perceptions, and everyone is unique. So you said you went through pain and you learnt through the pain, and I was the same, but for somebody else who hasn't gone through the pain, it simply doesn't exist. It's really hard to explain. It's not one or both. It is all, it's all of it. Like quantum physics, it's particle wave and both. It's black, white and gray. It's not, does that make sense? If people are really, really in pain, then they can only learn through getting out and learning what the pain felt like to not go back. But if someone's not in it, then they don't know until they've gone down a path. And they're like, oh, I'll be fine if I go down that path. And then they go down that path and it's like, shit, I wish I hadn't gone down here. So then they might not go back again. But where they are, they think, oh, I can go down that path. Almost like people who smoke and think, oh, I'm going to get cancer. And then 50 years' time, they get cancer. And it's like, oh, I wish I'd listened to somebody saying don't do it, but they only learn when the doctor says you've got fucking 4 months to live. Oh, now I've stopped smoking. It's like, you could have stopped smoking 60 years ago, you know?
I do, but I want to go back to what you were saying about the cow in the pasture or whatever, and being content at work. And I just want to challenge you to think, well, who are we to decide what's, like, for example, it's, I think in our, I don't know, I'm definitely playing devil's advocate today. It's just the energy I'm in. But in our community, right, we're all like, yeah, like, you know, quit your job and go do X, Y, Z, because maybe that worked for us, right?
Yes.
But it's also okay. Like, maybe that person you were describing that's content in their job. Okay, that doesn't mean that they're in the pasture or whatever, blindly following, like, as the sheep, right? We talk about, like, sheep's blindly following the herd or whatever. Doesn't mean that they're like that in all areas of their life. And it's also, it's okay if you, like, it's okay to be content with a 9-to-5 desk job. Like, it's okay to be content with, like I was using the plumber analogy earlier. It's okay. Like, it's not, I'm not this spiritual superiority, even though I'm on a spiritual awakening journey and I coach and help people through theirs and just through their life in general, if they feel called to my energy. doesn't mean that I know what's best for them. At the end of the day, only they know what's best for them. And I can't judge like their contentment. And it doesn't, maybe for me personally, would I be content in that situation? No. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not writing this, like the guidebook for anybody else's life, but my own. And I think the more we hold space for people on, like, we can't, okay. So imagine like, and I talked about this on a coaching intensive that I had this weekend. If somebody, like, let's say that I was coaching you, Oliver, okay? So, and you started kind of working down a path for like 10 minutes of like a thought process, right? I might know like a 1 minute into you speaking where I want to guide you to, or where I feel intuitively called to guide you to. Maybe you're thinking about a job change, right? And I know that you're a good artist and I know how to use social media to elevate artists. And so I hear you start talking about these things and I want to jump in and be like, oh yeah, like, you know, here's a shortcut, right? Here's a shortcut. But if I allow you to speak for 10 minutes, if I allow you to be your own vehicle to get from A to B, what happens when you get to B is you have a profound realization of what it is that you're going to be doing, right? Because you were, for the maybe the first time in your life for some people, were actually in the driver's seat of your own reality. So if I cut in and was like, hey, you know what? Like, you could just take this shortcut and do this, then that's really not serving you. And so I feel like sometimes when we talk about this awakening journey or whatever, part of it is just holding space for people's transformation instead of it being like, oh yeah, I know more than you because I'm not following the herd. Maybe it's like, hey, it's okay if you're following the herd, but like, I also really enjoy not. Do you want to hear why? Do you want to hear about like, you know, how I feel every day when I don't? Is that inspiring to you, or are you turned off by that? And it's not my responsibility or your responsibility or our responsibility to go in there and create shortcuts for people and tell them where to go. It's just our responsibility to be on our own path and our own journey and then share that with others and detach from the outcome. I almost said, you know, and hope that they feel inspired. But at the end of the day, maybe it's about detaching from that outcome and realizing that the same source that gave us our downloads, the same source that is giving us downloads right now, even right now, and is like creating the words that are coming out of my mouth, is the same source that's also holding space for that individual, even if he is content at his job. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Don't mute the mic, because it feels weird when I hear nothing. So don't mute the mic. So do your thing. It's true. Growing up, when you want to be a leader and you don't want to have to be a normal 9-to-5 employee, you want to be an entrepreneur businessman, you sort of mock the employee 9-to-5 lifestyle, right? And then you realize, okay, well, if I've got a business, I don't want to work. Who's working for me? These 9-to-5 employees. So you can't knock these people who follow, when in order for you to live your life of freedom and whatever, they need to work for you. So again, it's seeing it from your eyes going out and then seeing it with your eyes going back in. It's not just this or that. Somebody who follows a boss, for example, rather than as their own company, they could be the greatest friend outside of that. For example, you might have a sibling. They maybe work for somebody else. Your parents might work for somebody else. Often, you know, there's people all around us who work for more people than have their own business. It's just the way it is. You can see like-minded people attract like-minded people. You might know other business people, but the majority of people you've grown up with, known like me, they work for somebody else. They go to work, and then when they come out and see us, go to the cinema, go for a drink, whatever, they are just your friends. And whether they follow or lead or have 100 grand in the bank or 12 grand from Walmart, that doesn't have any relevance. Yes, you could say that they're more stressful when you are not in their company, because when they're at work during the day, they're stressful. And when they come and see you, then that's their time to just let it go and be happy and free. So you never see that stressful side. That might be the case. And somebody who works themselves isn't as stressful all the time. But you don't need to know what goes on when they're not with you. It's like when two couples live with each other, their stress becomes their happiness. It's all mixed in one. You're supposed to, in my eyes, have your own separate lives. When you come together, it's all about happiness, harmonious love, and just serving each other. And then you go back. Otherwise, it's everyone's problem is everyone's problem. And there's no like on and off. So it's like this negative and positive yin and yang complex. Each person sees the yin and the yang rather than, okay, we stay in our own lanes, we are independent people, and then we come together to share this extra love and harmonious, extra happiness, as I said, like cinema and the extra stuff. And then you go back, which is why so many relationships do not work, because they're just there all the time. Everyone's mood affects the other person's mood, whether it's a happy mood or a negative mood.
What if they're not stressed? Like, that's what I'm trying to get at, is like, we might be stressed. I might literally hate and resist with every fiber of my being, like a 9-to-5 job at Walmart. But what if they don't? Like, who are we to determine how somebody else's experience is? They might love it.
See, I don't have an answer to that. It's based on, so as you, people who go for spiritual awakening, they are constantly analyzing and critiquing and finding a better path and going back and questioning, because they want to be this perfect human. So on this journey, as I said, growing up, hated employees. And then I realized, actually, I might need employees to work for me. And they're just like normal, happy, loving people, like my mum, my dad and my sister. So knocking my parents for working for somebody, they're happy. And it's like, as you said, they might not be unhappy, because I'm thinking how I would feel if I was on that fucking computer all day doing spreadsheets. That's not them. And then you understand that their brain is created based on their circumstances growing up. If all they've ever known is working for somebody and this entrepreneur mindset didn't exist, that's all that they've ever known. If somebody goes to a school and everyone in that class is black, then you're going to fancy black people and have black friends, because that's all you've ever known. If you around hippie people wearing hippie clothes, seeing somebody wearing a suit will be like, that's just weird, and you'd wear hippie clothes. If you're around people who wear suits all the time, being around somebody who wears trackies, you won't feel the same, you won't fit in, so you're more likely to wear suits. So what you're exposed to growing up is what you look for. If you eat loads of Chinese and Asian food growing up, then you're gonna have it when you're older. But I know people who literally just have had fish and chips and McDonald's as their treat, and they have never really had Chinese Asian food, because when they were growing up, their parents never gave them Chinese takeaways or Indian food. And I'm like, how the fuck can you not like chow mein? That is absolutely crazy. So, and I know many people, right? It's like, for example, yeah. So it's like, it's as simple as that, really. We're looking at it from our point of view, and how do we know that they're not unhappy? And the answer is, if that is all they've ever known and their brain is programmed to follow to the point where they can almost read a book at school and their brain is custom to memorize it. I couldn't remember the first line. I'd get stressed. But if their brain is programmed to remember it all, then they are able to do spreadsheets more simple than we are able to, say, come up with an idea, because that's all they've ever known. And their brain hasn't had the need to think and create like we've done. So their brain is just doing what they've always known. And so, yes, it is based on us thinking about how would it be if we were in that situation. And the answer is, it's like a big, muscly man lifting up a car and a weak person not being able to lift up a pillow. It's two different things. They're two different energies, two different lifestyles, cultures. It's like Asian culture can have loads of nuts and like gluten from rice because that's all they've had from generations. And then Americans, they have a nut and like a specific nut and a sesame, and they fucking die because they're not used to that exposure of that said thing, whether it's food, energy. And yeah, it comes down to environment and perception. And it's so interesting because I know people, so a white guy went to predominantly black Asian school and they don't find white guys attractive. Because all they've ever known is black guys in their year, and that's what they go for. That's all they've ever known. And if they were in a Chinese school in China, for example, they moved over there when they were younger, they'd look for attractions in Chinese people because that's all they've ever known. And it's based on what you're used to, what's in your surroundings.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think like when it comes to attraction based off of race, there's just a lot there, because there's also implicit bias. And like, if you know, that's a podcast for another time. So I don't necessarily agree with that. But everything else you're saying, I think I do agree with it. And I think where this comes from is like from my heart space of, I really want to drive home the fact in the personal development community, in the entrepreneurial community, and in the spiritual community, which I think are all coming together right now, is the fact that you don't enter this path because there's something wrong with you. I truly believe that the best way to inspire growth is to allow people the space to tap into their unique gifts and talents and elevate them while holding space to heal through the other things, right? So instead of, for example, if you came to me and you were like, Jessica, I really struggle with anxiety and depression, and I don't know what to do. Like, I hate my job. I'd be like, okay, cool. You know, like, well, let's talk about what do you like to do? And you're like, I love drawing. So what I would want to focus on, what I would focus on, is the fact that you love drawing. Drawing brings you joy. Drawing brings you creativity. Maybe we'd work out different ideas of how you can use drawing professionally, right? Maybe it's graphic design. Maybe it's portrait creation. Maybe it's abstract art. Then we would work on, hey, you know, actually, here are the things you can do to start selling that and generating an income from that. You know, maybe it's talking to a local gallery. Maybe it's starting an Instagram page. Maybe it's doing commissions for people online. Maybe it's having an Etsy shop, right? How would you sell those products? Here's a social media marketing plan that works for you, that's conscious and sustainable and feminine and is more tapped into your multidimensionalism, right? And then when they're moving through that process, I would be aware of their anxiety and their depression, right? And what comes up with that for them during that process. Because anytime that you're creating something, your shadows are going to come up, right? So I would know on our coaching calls maybe, or just, you know, energetically, what they're moving through, and then hold space for that too. Hey, Oliver, what's coming up for you right now? I noticed there's hesitation in your voice. Oh, you know, when I was 5, my dad told me I was the worst artist on the planet. Hey, it's okay. Let's talk about that. You know, how was that experience like? What is that? How does that make you feel? What has that held you back from doing in the past? And then we talk about, you know, why are you a good artist, right? What are some parts about your art style that you love? And then moving from that place of creation versus the place of an emphasis on you're broken, you need me to fix you. Because it's totally like, I think like the guru mentality is a little sus in our community of like, okay, well, you're broken and I can fix you. No, what if it's like, hey, you're a completely whole, complete being on your own and I can help you. I want to say capitalize, but it sounds really like, sounds a little bit too capitalistic for me. It's more like, you know, I can help you accentuate your gifts and expand on the parts of you that you love. And moving from that space, that might induce some sort of spiritual awakening journey. It might not. I don't know, you know? And that's the thing, is there's no outcome. There's no attachment to an outcome. It's just somebody's journey, because the journey's not linear. Like, do I feel more spiritually developed than I was when I was 15? Yeah. When I was 15, did I feel more spiritually developed because I started my awakening journey young than when I was 4? Yeah. When I'm, you know, 45, will I probably feel more spiritually developed than right now? Yeah. When I die, that's a whole nother spiritual awakening, in my opinion. It's a birth into a new life. But if I'm constantly, if I'm chasing this spiritual awakening journey or this ascension or this enlightenment as it's something that's outside of myself, and especially as if it's something that's outside of myself because I'm broken and I need fixing, that's just not a journey that I want to go on, and I don't want anybody else to either, you know, because that's just another, what we're doing in that situation is we're leaving one rat race and we're entering another.
So imagine you've got just land, right? Texas land or California land. Acres and acres and acres. Imagine there's a KFC, right? You can smell the KFC as you go past. But at some point, okay, if you had like a technical device that could pick up the particles in the air of chicken or chips, whatever, at some point, as it gets distant and faded, there's going to be less and less and less particles until you can smell it, and then you can't. So that part of when you can or can't smell, it literally could be a meter, that distance between I can pick it up and I can't. And that could be just a minute particle in the air, and the KFC could be miles away, but it's just a small scent in the air. What you were saying, hang on, just lost my train, hang on. People who, so again, it's about resetting the energy. So I don't believe that you can particularly help and heal people. As you said, they've already got their own abilities to do it themselves. People like us are just like a petrol station on the way on a long journey. They just pop to get a sandwich. So they just need a sandwich, but they can also get a chocolate bar, a drink. They can get a magazine. The whole point is that they still have to stop off. And they are, whether they get a sandwich, a chocolate bar, a torch or whatever, the outcome's still the same. They didn't need it. They just needed a sandwich. All this extra stuff is like, okay, well, I might need it down the line. I find from trying to heal my friends growing up who didn't ask to be healed, that I wasted my time at this moment because they relapsed. Just like I gave them a sandwich, but I fed them really well. I gave them a starter, a main, and a dessert, and loads of drinks. And they didn't need to because they had their own fridge, right? All the extra stuff I taught them was like the torch and the magazine and the towel and all this other shit. But because I stopped off at the petrol station to get a sandwich and not the torch and all the other stuff, I don't need it right now. But it doesn't mean that in time, because I've got a torch, that I'm going to be like, oh, I remember Oliver gave me a torch. I've got that torch. I've got that magazine. What was that towel, that thing, that spare tire I bought? Oh, now I can use that. So spending hours and hours and hours on people, or 10 minutes, the outcome's the same. They're either in that headspace to evolve and take their own selves down that path, or they're not. But the extra information we give, you could say it's time consuming, not a waste of time, because that might be triggers down the line. Like stuff I say to you might suddenly trigger in a few weeks' time. Like, oh, we said that. Oh, it makes sense. Same for you and for me. But it might not really resonate now. Things come back. If you've had that scent of KFC, your brain now knows there's a KFC. So it's got a thought of KFC as opposed to just your usual pasta, right? But if that KFC restaurant didn't exist, then that KFC doesn't exist in your mind. You just focus on pasta. Or if, for example, you were a meter to the right towards the KFC, that gap between smelling the KFC and not, then that meter means that your brain has gone into a mindset of, oh, I know there's a KFC out there versus what is a KFC. So the people who go through an awakening have had a glimpse of there's more to life. The energy has already been pulled that way. A parent said something, a grandparent said something, something on the news, a book you read. Their brain, their energy has been exposed to that thing which somebody else all the way in Texas never smelt. So that bit of KFC smell in the air is like a grandparent saying, you could be anything you want, when that kid was four. But that's enough to spark off something, and their energy is pulled that way. Whereas if that person never smelt that KFC, never had a grandma that says, you could be anything you ever wanted, they're just happy with working for somebody else. And therefore this awakening doesn't exist, because the awakening is essentially them being exposed to a KFC. They can't get it out of their head until they've had that chicken. So now that chicken is existing in your mindset. You have to go get in your car and drive miles and miles and miles to find that KFC. As I said, it could be so far away, but the wind's brought it to you. But you know it's there. That could be a long journey. It could be hours. It could be days. You get to the KFC and you enjoy it. And that's that journey, like that awakening of, I'm trapped. I want to free myself. And then I found it, like a bee in a bonnet. A thought is in your head and you can't get it out. But once you've got it out, it doesn't exist. That's what came to mind when you mentioned about, I saw in my mind the suction of energy. So if you're exposed to the smell of KFC, you know what it is. But if you're not, then you don't. Yeah. I can't remember why that triggered off, but that's what came to my mind.
Well, no, thank you for sharing that. And I think that's kind of what I'm getting at is, like, you know, the more we focus on ourselves and we share our experiences, that's the KFC smell. And something that, yes, I say to, I have this analogy in my social media and business coaching I do intuitive business social media strategy. And something I'll say is, because, you know, like, women will come to me and be like, well, why is nobody enrolling in my program? And I say, well, it's because nobody knows you have one. So I said, you know, you get to really talk about it often, because it's kind of like when you go to Whole Foods and, you know, the guy gives, like, you go in every day for whatever, or you go in every other day or once a week for groceries, right? So the first time you go in, there's like a pizza stand and the guy offers you a sample and you're like, no, I'm okay, whatever, you shop, go home. The next day,
what you're gonna say.
Right? And then you take a sample and then you're like, okay, like, that was really good pizza, but I'm never gonna, like, I came in for beans. Why would I get pizza, right? Go get your beans, go home. And then one day when you're thinking about who has good, like, you want pizza, it's like, you know that Whole Foods has good pizza, so you buy it. So it's the same analogy. It's really beautiful to hear it explained in, like, different words and different analogies, but it's true. It's like,
That's all we're doing right now in this podcast is we're giving people, we're letting people know that we have pizza, and if they want it, it tastes really good.
Exactly. It's like, so you've got subliminal advertising where you could say you've got a an image in the, for example, you've got Disney films, like Disney films, right? And you've got this background image, which quite clearly looks like a cock, right? But it's made as if it's just like a wiggly worm. Subconsciously, you could say it's a sex, you know, the Illuminati, all that shit. There's subliminal stuff to make you go down a certain path, right? So that you could say subliminal. Or if it's not put in there purposely, trying to hide something, it's just there. So when adverts come on TV, they don't have to try and make you buy this shoe by using certain clever words like a hypnosis person would. They just have to put the shoe on the screen. And even though you might not buy that shoe right now, the fact that you've seen that shoe, it's in your mind. So subliminal advertising versus just advertising, we're just advertising. There's no subliminal advertising like certain patterns or sounds. You know, like Darren Brown or hypnosis, like David Blaine. Their shows, they would have certain words or you'd say certain things to subliminally make you think about stuff. Or if you go back to, like, say, Disney films, there is, you can go online. I don't believe in all this Illuminati stuff. I believe people are looking for certain things. No, right?
But definitely like a form of advertising that's been used since for in America, since the first movie theaters existed, especially with like Coca-Cola. They would literally flash, you know, they flash images subliminally in those films to inspire people to go and, you know, buy Coca-Cola at the little stand during the intermission or whatever. Like, that's been going on here. Well, and at least in advertising, it's well documented and even educated and taught in school. You know, I learned about this. I learned about subliminal messaging in my undergraduate studies in journalism and media studies. It wasn't hidden, you know, but I don't know about the obviously like, you know, they weren't talking about Illuminati and all these other things, conspiracy theories, but it's well known that subliminal advertising exists.
So the subliminal is like they flash a Coke so quickly that you don't recall seeing it, but your brain saw it. Whereas just advertising is just there's a Coke can. So you could say the outcome's the same. You could say that they may go and get a Coke in the break after seeing a flash, not knowing why. Or they could see that Coke and go and get it. Or they might in time think, oh, what can I drink? And because they've seen that Coke can, they might think, oh, I'm going to get a Coke, just like you're thinking of pizza. You've had it at Walmart or whatever you said, Costco. So now you're going to go to Costco as opposed to McDonald's because Costco gave you a pizza slice. So the outcome's the same. And the things that we say might not make sense now, but in time, people might be like, oh, remember when they said that thing? So just by having a smell or something is real, like that KFC scent in the air, having that belief of, oh, there could be an opportunity to be an entrepreneur and move out of Texas to go to California. If you've been exposed to that through an advert for it, maybe a grandfather was a businessman, the fact you heard of a businessman word as opposed to just working for somebody means that there's something else that exists. And I don't think you can get that out of your head. It's like if, for example, you want to experiment with the opposite sex. If you've had that thought as opposed to strictly monogamous Christian male and female, then that's not going to be in your mindset. Whereas if you've had that think, oh, I wonder what it's like to be with a girl or a guy, you've got to experience and go down that path. Otherwise, it'll be in your head forever. Just like if you don't get some certain food out your mind, like if you want to go McDonald's or go for a pizza, it's going to be in your head until you do it. It like might be a few weeks or a few months, but it's going to be in your head until you rule it out because pizza's bad for you, or you do it. Like if you want a handbag, you might just seen it on the TV, so now it's in your mindset. And until you either get it or think, do you know what, I don't need a cheaper handbag, I've got 10, you've got to rule it out, otherwise you'll go down that path. Either way, it's like quantum physics. As soon as you put out that frequency, it's out there. It's coming back either way until you rule it out by observing it again.
Or walking into it and just doing it.
Yeah. And then
obviously it's not like a violent, you know, some sort of like violent, horrible thought. If it's like to eat McDonald's or to whatever, like, do I think that all decisions are healthy decisions? No, but sometimes you learn about the healthy decision through making the poor one, right? Maybe you learn about, maybe you eat McDonald's every, I haven't had McDonald's in like 12 years, but I have had a lot of chocolate, right? So what will happen to me is like, maybe I'll get a craving for chocolate around my moon cycle or something. And if I eat it, like, let's say I have a piece of chocolate every day for 3 days. then I that's like the last thing I want after that. I'm like, okay, I'm just like, I want a salad. Like, I want toast. I want it's a sandwich, right? Because I actually allowed myself to walk into those thoughts. I allowed myself to explore what it would feel like, right?
A fine example is that I used to be addicted to crisps, and every time I'd walk past the crisp drawer, I'd think of crisps, and because I know the thoughts become things, and eventually the more I hold back that thought, and you've already had four today, and more I think about it and try and stop it, I'm going to do it. So then I will learn something. And whether this is a general thing for humanity or my own experience, as you said, it's either or. Some people, there might be similarities, and for some people there might not be. And if some people who don't have these similarities, if they were in a similar situation, they might have to go through the same thing to get to the same outcome. It's all subjective. But now I don't have crisps anymore. But when I get crisps in my head, I know it's going to be in my head until I eat crisps. So now what I do is, rather than having a pack and thinking I wish I had three and then having four or five, I will get a whole tube of Pringles, a whole bag of Doritos. I will eat the whole lot until I feel sick, until I have acid reflux, until I have to make myself puke because I feel so sick that I then remember that experience of how shitty you felt when you had those crisps, to the point where the next time I think about crisps isn't every month or every 2 months, it's every three, 4 months. So it's like you learn, you have to, as I said, I personally only learn through the pain, because my need for control of everything's going to be fine, it is nonsense, because I'm not in control. The universe is in control. So as much as I'm aware and more wise than say most people, I'm still a human. I still have to go through the shit. I still have to maintain my awakening, maintain my compulses, my urges. I still have to be disciplined of getting up at the same time. Otherwise, I relapse to what I used to be doing when I was 20 before I had an awakening, which is getting up at 2, going to bed at 5, not showering. I have to maintain it. It's just as hard. I was going to say, you said your moon cycle, or you eat chocolate around your cycle. Okay. How long have you got left?
Like 2 minutes.
Okay. Finish what you're going to say. Your moon cycle thing, you say you eat chocolate every cycle. What do you mean? Like every year, every month? What do you mean by cycle?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for sharing that story. I definitely don't want to encourage people to make themselves throw up. I see, I understand what you're saying and your analogy, but like that is disordered eating and it's not healthy or supportive to encourage people to do. In America, it's kind of a big problem here, but I don't know what it's like over there. But I do want to say that your moon cycle is your period, it's your menstruation cycle. So for women, you know, we naturally menstruate with a full or the new moon. So we call it a moon cycle in spiritual communities. So, you know, PMS is basically when you're approaching your moon. So, you know, we all have different food. It's literally natural science, like food cravings or things like that. So if like a week leading up to my menstruation, I'm really craving chocolate, I allow myself to eat it, and then sure enough, like after, like, let's say that I have like a peanut butter cup or like two peanut butter cups or even like a bowl of ice cream Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, by Thursday, I'm like, that's like the last thing I want to eat. You know what I mean? Because I allowed myself to eat it. I'm not saying that you should binge eat it and purge it. It's okay if you do, like, have kindness and compassion for yourself, but just allowing yourself to have what it is that you're craving, the craving goes away.
Plug your website and your whatever you're doing right now quickly before we end.
So yeah, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Oliver, for having me on this podcast. My name is Jessica Winans. I'm a spiritual life coach, intuitive business, social media strategist, and yoga teacher currently located in San Diego, California. If you're interested in connecting with me or applying for one-on-one coaching, you can follow me on Instagram at _JessWinans. That's JessWinans. You can also follow me on TikTok at Jessica Winans, and you can visit my website, jesswinans.com. Thank you all so much for your time. Thank you again, Oliver. That was so lovely, and it was so beautiful to connect with you in this way. Such a fun, stimulating conversation.
We will do this again, but one last thing. I don't eat to purge. Okay. I apply action to my thought, which is I want some crisps. I overeat because I can't stop, they're too tasty. Acid reflux builds up. I feel sick. From experience, I know I'm going to feel sick all through the night unless I make myself sick. So for experience, I know if I make myself sick, that acid from all that shit I've eaten goes within 5 minutes. Otherwise, I spend all night being sick, just to make that clear.
Okay, cool.
Right. Wait there, let me just stop this and I'll just say goodbye one sec. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Remember to subscribe and follow so when I release a new one, you get a notification. And follow me on Instagram, YesKingOliver. Ciao, amigos.